Mark Brewer as former chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. Jeff Timmer as former executive director of the Michigan Republicans. And this is a Republic, if you can keep it, with Mark Brewer and Jeff Timmer.
Welcome to A Republic If You Can Keep It. I'm Jeff Timmer. Later in the podcast, Mark Brewer and I will be joined by Washington Post contributing columnist and the best-selling military historian, Max Boot. But we begin this week, as always, with the politics of the day.
Well, Jeff, you know, there's been so much going on that I think we need to kind of try to tie it all together. You know, here we are almost a year from the election, and there's all of this activity going on that all relates back to the election. Just give you a couple examples. We had Trump's crazy speech in Iowa last weekend where he specifically named Detroit as a place where there was election fraud that hurt him. And we all know that that's not true. You know, today's rally in Lansing, where we saw all the folks who are, again, in favor of audits, relitigating 2020, all out there, and the announcement at that rally that there's going to be a petition drive to force an audit of the 2020 election and provide for such audits in the future. Article in the Detroit News this week that talked about a concerted effort to sabotage and subvert the local canvassing boards in this state by appointing all these big lie supporters as Republicans. So, you know, it seems to me these are not unrelated. All this ties together in terms of an ongoing effort to subvert elections, not only here in Michigan, but nationally. What do you think?
You're so right, Mark. And even as we're recording this, the news has broken that the leading Republican contender for governor, former Detroit Police Chief James Craig, is also calling for an audit of the 2020 election. That just underscores where the Republican Party is at, that there is this litmus test of insanity that has to be met. It is a fundamental line in the sand that Republicans have to be on one side or they have no chance of party support. Now, you know, we can talk and we have and we should about winning the nomination at a convention or in an August primary by those extreme lunatic, dangerous, illiberal, authoritarian positions they may aid these candidates in winning their nomination. They will, I think, likely doom them in November in statewide elections and in competitive legislative and congressional elections. However, I think it is very telling about the state of major party politics. We have one party that is, it's not even covertly trying to sabotage democracy. It is an open, visible, sunlight on its assault on the fundamental pillars of democracy, on the elections itself. It's not the rallies of these kooks, like the Star Wars Cantina mega kooks that were on the Capitol steps today, the trucker Randy Bishops and the Kristen Karamos and you know, people like that. It's the Detroit News article that you mentioned about the people being appointed to county certification boards, these boards of canvassers across Michigan and across the country. What this is a deliberate, premeditated effort. It's a strategy to put the mechanism of gridlock in place to delegitimize the election, not just rhetorically call the outcome into question, or even leading up to the election, say, well, you know, we don't know if we can trust what's going on. It's to have in place in the next election what they failed to have in place and make happen in the last one, and that was to gum up the certification works, to grind the everything to a halt, to allow uncertainty and chaos to prevail, and to create an atmosphere in which a coup of clowns like we saw on January 6th might actually succeed. And that's what we're heading toward. I question whether or not we're going to have a legitimate election in the foreseeable future. And by that, I mean we have a governor's election going on right now in Virginia, where the Republican Glenn Youngkin is calling for a pre-election audit of all the voting machinery. That's performative art to before he loses, which he's going to call into question why he lost. Well, it was rigged. It was stolen. There's something nefarious going on. These machines are why, you know, the election was stolen from me. That puts us in a place where the winner of an election is always called into question as to whether or not they legitimately belong there by about, you know, not half, but you know, a certain, you know, approaching half of the electorate in any state or the country. That's a dangerous position. It's untenable for democracy.
I think you're right. That's straight out of the Trump playbook. Well, we remember early in 2020, he started saying, well, if I don't win, it's going to be fraud. He started campaigning against absentee ballots. And so, you know, we're seeing all these candidates now take a page out of that playbook and create these doubts. And I think I saw some polling data recently that in Michigan, certainly a majority of Republican voters have doubts about whether Biden was legitimately elected. And that is the result of the constant repetition of these lies about the election since last year. And again, all these things that are going on now, we see in Macomb County, demands for an audit, and the clerk is starting to give ground on some of that. You know, the rally today, again, audit, audit, audit. I understand there are even some QAnon supporters present at that rally today. And that just, again, shows how fringe and extremist this has become. And it's taken on an energy of its own. And I just really worry that independent voters, Democrats like me, aren't taking this threat to democracy seriously enough. Chris Thomas was quoted in that Detroit News article saying, look, you get a handful or a few of these county boards that refuse to certify, and it's unprecedented chaos in the election system. And unfortunately, that's just going to reinforce people's belief that maybe the election's not legitimate. So, again, I'm very concerned, and I know we're going to talk to our guests about this shortly, about where all this is headed, because it does seem like an organized, concerted effort across a wide variety of mechanisms to undermine our democracy here in Michigan and nationally going forward. It's not about 2020 anymore. It's about wrecking elections in the future.
Absolutely. And if winning elections now depends on controlling the logistics, the mechanism of how elections are conducted, who's counting the votes determines who wins. If that's where we're headed, we are no different than a third world banana republic, because, you know, that we don't have true democracy any longer. And so, I mean, I talk about we're heading there. It feels like we are there now. I mean, with the Republicans taking these unprecedented steps to remove the heretic from the board, the Wayne County Board of Canvassers, who dared to certify the very clear outcome of the Wayne County elections. You know, folks like that who were ardent Trump supporters.
I got a phone call from Trump, you know, within a few hours of that meeting, Jeff. I mean, no, this is part of the continuing purge inside the Republican Party that we saw start after the election, right? Censor people, kick them out of the party. Now remove people from these canvassing boards because they are not pure Trump supporters.
We are in dangerous, dangerous place. And I fear for what we're going to witness over the next year. We see clerks leaving office in Michigan and around the country. We know that it's been hard for these clerks to get election workers necessary to just conduct the fundamentals of election day. That's going to be harder as these people are facing, you know, threats of violence and chaos and disruption at polling places. The kinds of things that we've watched happen elsewhere in the world and shaken our head at are happening right here. And no one, I shouldn't say no one, not enough people seem sufficiently alarmed. Well, and I know that's something that Max Boot, who will be joining us soon, has written about, and I look forward to that discussion.
Yeah, all this violence is very alarming, and it's not just in the election area. You know, we see public health officials, right? The Kent County health director said he was forced off the road You know, we've had very raucous school board and other meetings where people have been threatened with violence and called all kinds of vile names. And it just does seem like the limits are gone. That, you know, the purpose of politics was to channel our differences into an election process. But those boundaries seem to be gone thanks to Trump and his ilk.
Columnist and historian Max Booth joins the conversation after these messages on A Republic If You Can Keep It.
The Michigan Polycast, a weekly roundup on Michigan policy and politics from a progressive point of view. Each week, veteran political junkies Christine Berry and Walt Sorg look at the latest news and views in Michigan, as well as the national stories impacting our pleasant peninsulas.
The Polycast also brings you interviews with top newsmakers in Michigan from government, politics, our universities, and political advocacy groups. There's a new episode every Tuesday morning.
The Michigan Polycast is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Show your support for preserving our republic at the A Republic If You Can Keep It merch store. We've got t-shirts and coffee mugs made to order for lovers of our representative democracy. Just go to our website, arepublicpodcast.com, and click on the merch store button. You aren't fully dressed until you have Ben Franklin on your chest. It's the perfect gift for that democracy lover in your life.
Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm with nearly four decades of experience accurately measuring public opinion about politics, ballot proposals, and other federal, state, and local issues. Epic MRA is one of the most quoted polling firms in the country. Clients include media outlets, school districts, colleges and universities, state agencies, local governments, labor unions, interest groups, and businesses throughout Michigan. Whether it's measuring voter opinion about who's up or down in elections, or if ballot proposals or legislation can earn voter approval, Epic MRA is known as the go-to Michigan pollster. Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
Max Boot is a historian, best-selling author, columnist, and national security analyst who has been called one of the world's leading authorities on armed conflict by the International Institute for Strategic Studies. He is the Jean J. Kirkpatrick Senior Fellow in National Security Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations and a columnist for the Washington Post. He has written six best-selling books, including The Road Not Taken, Edward Lansdale in the American Tragedy in Vietnam, a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in biography.
Booth was a senior foreign policy advisor to John McCain's presidential campaign in 2007 and 08, Mitt Romney's campaign in 2011 and 12, and Marco Rubio's campaign in 2015 and 16. He served as an advisor to U.S. commanders in Iraq and Afghanistan. He has lectured on behalf of the U.S. State Department and at many military institutions, including the Army, Navy, and Air War Colleges, the Australian Defense College, the John F. Kennedy Special Warfare School, West Point, and the Naval Academy.
Max wrote what I thought was a very compelling column yesterday that really spoke to me. It really indicated what I've been saying for a long time. And let me just quote Max, where he wrote, "I'm a single issue voter. My issue is the fate of democracy in the United States." Max, welcome. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about what caused you to write this column.
Well, thank you very much. Happy to be here. I mean, I really wrote it because I feel like it's very easy in Washington, and I say this as somebody who's not in Washington, but I feel like in Washington, it's very easy to get wrapped up in kind of the political controversies du jour. And of course, the one which is dominating the coverage right now is the battle over the big spending bills in Congress, the infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better bill. And there's a lot of obviously controversy between moderates and liberals in the Democratic Party over what size those packages should be. And, you know, is Joe Manchin going to go along? Yada, yada, yada. You've all seen the coverage. And I feel like the assumption behind that coverage is that that is going to be the make or break for the Biden presidency, which may well turn out to be the case. This is what all the political prognosticators say. And who am I to doubt their pronouncements? But the point I was trying to make in this column is this is not going to be make or break for my vote. My vote is going to be based on one simple factor, which is which party is going to uphold and defend American democracy. And obviously in the past, that would not have gotten you very far because, you know, I'm old enough to remember a time when both parties upheld American democracy. So you could choose between them on different issues. But right now, unfortunately, as I think you will agree, we are in a situation where I just can't, you know, I don't have faith that if Republicans win in 2022 and 2024, America will still be a democracy at the end of that process. I just don't. And, you know, you can, there's a million examples you can point to of the growing authoritarianism of the Trumpified Republican Party. It's just a fact, and it's getting worse, not better. What we saw on January 6th is looking less like a one-off event and more like the precursor of something conceivably far worse in the future. And so under those circumstances, the point I was making in this column is, you know, it doesn't really matter what size the Build Back Better bill is. Most of the other things that people are debating in Washington don't matter. What matters is preserving our democracy. And the only way to do that, I think, is to vote for Democrats up and down the ballot. And I say that as somebody who's not a Democrat, who used to be a Republican, but you know, fundamentally, I am a small D Democrat, and I just recognize the only way to preserve our small D democracy is to vote for the big D Democratic Party right now.
And you can look at you know, what was going on in Michigan today. For those in Michigan, you've seen the news about the rally at the state capitol where the Republican Party and Trump supporters were rallying, as it were. There were tens, maybe dozens of people out in support of another election audit. And just in the last 4 seconds here, a news flash has come across my phone that the leading gubernatorial candidate on the Republican side, former Detroit police chief James Craig, is now calling for an audit of the 2020 elections. And so that is going to be the litmus test for Republicans. They have to disavow the legitimacy of the election itself. It can't just be that, hey, we fought the good fight and we lost, like when Mark and I used to compete against each other. We'd go on, you know, lick our wounds if one of us lost and go on and you know, rally for the next election. Now it's casting the previous election, the legitimacy into question. But it's not that they have any hope of overturning that last election. They all know that that's a fallacy. But what they're doing is setting up the mechanism and the ability to delegitimize the results of the next election. They're putting people in place that are going to be appointed or are being appointed to various county boards that certify elections in the counties around the state and around the country so that they can grind the process to a halt and delegitimize the outcome. And this is, we're in uncharted waters here in the United States, and this is very, very dangerous for that small D democracy.
Right. And it's just to emphasize the point, this has never happened before. I mean, we've had a country for, you know, more than two centuries, and this is the first time in all that history that a defeated president has refused to recognize the outcome of the election. Never happened before. And of course, never had a situation where a president incited an insurrection and led his followers to violently storm the Capitol in the hopes of staging a coup and allowing him to remain in office. I mean, this is the fact. This is what actually happened in the last year. And the really sad thing about all this, the really alarming thing about all this, is that it is not, as far as I can tell, caused one iota of drop off in support for Trump, that he is still supported by more than 60% of the Republican Party. He is still a shoo-in for the 2024 presidential nomination if he wants it. And instead of repudiating Trump, what Republicans are doing is repudiating democracy, because, you know, the baseline of democracy, the kind of the definition of democracy, is that the losers have to accept the outcome. They have to accept that they lose at the ballot box and go on from there. If they don't accept that, you don't have a democracy. You have an ongoing competition for power, which can be waged often in extra legal or even violent ways. And I think that's what you're seeing the Trump forces have already engaged in violence, and they're, you know, gearing up for more, because their view is that they will take power by any means necessary, and they're not going to be dissuaded by mere technicalities like losing the popular vote.
Max, you put your finger on what's going on inside the Republican Party. What is your sense of the rest of us? I mean, are the Democrats sufficiently alarmed by this at the federal level, at the state level? I mean, what's your sense? Or are we Democrats basically kind of treating all this as business as usual, and we've not awakened to the new reality?
I think more of that than anything else. I think there are certainly some Democrats who are very alarmed, but I think it's very hard to get out of the kind of business as usual mindset in Washington, especially when you've been in Washington as long as, you know, folks like Joe Biden or Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. And, you know, I respect them all. They're all great public servants, but they've been doing this for a long time, and they've dealt with Republicans for years. And most of that time, it was completely innocuous because, you know, they were dealing with Republicans like John McCain or Mitt Romney or George W. Bush, where you could, you know, disagree with them on policies, but you didn't think that they were a fundamental threat to the Constitution. And so it's very hard to adjust to this new reality that we face. And I think the ones that are having the hardest time are folks like Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema, who are, you know, in kind of typical deal-making mode and still very attached to the filibuster, which they see as a guarantor of bipartisanship and comedy and deal-making, when the reality is just the opposite right now, that the filibuster is enabling Republican extremism and could well enable Republicans to seize power by making it much more difficult for Democrats to vote. And so, you know, the filibuster could well, you know, be the instrument that ultimately does in American democracy. And I don't think that enough folks in the Senate in particular are sufficiently alarmed about that prospect.
Yeah, we've had some Democrats on the show, some Michigan members of Congress, for example, who've been very alarmed by what they're hearing out of Kevin McCarthy, for example, the Republican leader in the House. But I agree with your assessment that it does seem to be not just in Washington, but also in the states, that it's too much business as usual, that people think this is just a passing phase and eventually we'll get beyond it. But here we are nearly a year after the election, and we're still basically relitigating the election. I'm an election lawyer by trade now, and we see it all the time. I've never seen this kind of situation, unprecedented, to, you know, copy a word that you used yesterday in your column. What do you think can be done, though, to get the attention of those who should be paying attention about the alarming situation we find ourselves in?
I mean, honestly, at this point, if people are not alarmed, I don't know what it's going to take. I mean, it was, you know, a year ago. I mean, I remember, you know, I was one of the people who was sounding the alarm more than a year ago. And I took part in this election war game that was organized by various nonprofits last summer, or not, you know, not the summer of 2021, but the summer of 2020, where we basically expected and predicted that Trump would try to seize power by unconstitutional means. And he went out and did precisely that. But I remember, like, you know, saying this last year before the election, this was not exactly a majority position. There was a lot of people who took the kind of Ross to that view, Ross being the New York Times columnist, whose position was, oh, you know, maybe Trump isn't so wonderful. Maybe he's not a great Democrat, but he's too incompetent. You don't really have to worry about him pulling off a coup. Well, he almost pulled it off. I mean, we came very, very close. And, you know, now that we have the John Eastman memo out there, we know that there was an actual game plan for how they were going to overthrow the government. And basically, in my estimation, there were basically two things that prevented the Eastman memo from actually being carried out. I mean, leave aside its legality, which is certainly highly dubious. But I think as a practical matter, the two things that prevented it from being carried out were, A, that there were still enough Republicans at both the state level and in Washington who are insufficiently radicalized. You know, people like the Secretary of State in Georgia, or, you know, on the Wayne County Board of Electors, or you know, other Republicans who still upheld the rule of law and didn't realize that they were supposed to overthrow democracy in the name of Trumpism. So that was one factor foiling the Eastman memo. And the other factor was very simply the fact that Republicans did not actually control the House. And so ultimately, I don't think there was any way that even if Pence had done exactly what Trump told him to do, which was not to certify the vote, I don't think there's any mechanism by which that could have actually kept Trump in office. The worst case scenario would have been that Nancy Pelosi would have prevented a House vote, and they would have basically gotten to January 20th with no elected president, and then Nancy Pelosi could have become president and then certified the election of Joe Biden. So that's the worst case scenario that could have happened in 2020. But again, that's only because Democrats were in control of the House and there were enough constitutional Republicans in the land to not provide the kind of support that Trump wanted for his coup. But what we're seeing now, of course, is that both of those facts could be very different by 2022, because A, you're seeing Trump loyalists are purging all of the constitutional Republicans from office. And of course, the prime example of that is Liz Cheney, who has lost her position as the number three Republican in the House caucus because she will not go along with the big lie. And Liz could well lose her House seat next year as well. And so might Adam Kinzinger, the other profile in courage among House Republicans. And then at the same time as that's happening, you're seeing widespread predictions that Republicans are likely to pick up the House in 2022 because of gerrymandering, because off-year elections favor the out party, you know, a variety of factors. And so you could go into 2024 with a situation where Republicans could conceivably control both the House and Senate, and they could well have laid down the law so that all Republican office holders know that they're not supposed to challenge a Trump coup. And very few, far fewer of them will do that in 2024 than were willing to do that in 2020. So, you know, that's the situation that we have today. And if you're not alarmed enough about, then you're not paying attention.
Yeah, I think yesterday we had an event that was very telling and indicative of exactly that. I would argue on January 6th, most of the Republicans were not in favor of the violent coup. But since then, since it failed, most have signed up to cover up and be part of it in retrospect. And that defies reason. And what I say yesterday, what happened is Trump released a video in which he praised the radicalized Ashley Babbitt, who was killed trying to injure police officers and enter the prohibited areas in the Capitol. And in this video, he takes to task the Capitol Police, the very people who held the line, the very thin thread that held our democracy together. And not a single Republican of any stature anywhere has said that's wrong. They've all ignored what Trump said and what he's doing. And part of this falls on maybe how numb we've all become, the media included, to this deluge of crazy. It's just Trump does this stuff so often that it's not taken seriously. How much more evidence do we need that we should take him very seriously, that whatever we can imagine is the worst outcome is exactly how far he's willing to go, exactly what depths he's willing to sink to.
Right. And it's spooky and eerie, because I feel like in some ways we're back to kind of a 2015 mindset. Because remember when Trump was first running, most political savants did not take him seriously. You know, HuffPost covered him in their entertainment section. The whole premise was, this guy is a buffoon, he's a clown, he's a joke. So, you know, we don't have to take him seriously as a presidential candidate. And yes, he is a buffoon, a clown, and a joke, but you got to take him seriously because we saw that he was elected and he did tremendous damage to democracy over 4 years, and he carried out this attempted coup. And, you know, he's going to be, if he comes back into office, which is certainly not impossible, and quite possible, in fact, if he comes back into office, he's going to be 10 times more dangerous than he was before, because he's actually going to have experience. He's not going to, because remember, early on in his presidency, he listened to some relatively establishmentarian figures like Jim Mattis and others because he just didn't have a clue what was going on. He was completely, you know, lost in government. But then as time went on, he started gaining confidence and started firing anybody who was competent or stood up for the Constitution and replacing them with these crazy conspiracy mongers and lickspittles like, you know, Rick Grenell as director of national intelligence, internet troll, basically as director of intelligence, or, you know, acting secretaries of defense, basically people who would not stand up to him. And there were still a few folks who stood up to him, you know, like at the end, the acting attorney general, Jeff Rosen, refused to pressure Georgia or other states to overturn their ballots. But then you had another guy, you had another, you know, an assistant attorney general who was willing to do his bidding. And I'm pretty sure if Trump wins next time, he's going to know who to appoint. I mean, he's going to have his list of the most fanatical extremists who will do his bidding under any circumstances. And those are the people he's going to appoint. And then he's going to purge people like, you know, General Mark Milley or others who he sees as obstacles to his design. So, yeah, I would be pretty goddamn worried at this point, and just hope that we don't make the same mistake we did in 2015 of dismissing it all as this far-fetched joke. It's not.
I'm fascinated by your view, Max, that you think the filibuster ultimately could become a weapon to undo American democracy. I mean, the irony of that, right, that it was designed historically, one version, to protect minority rights. But because people don't understand the use to which it's now being put.
Well, it was designed to protect the rights of minorities within the Senate, but it was designed to oppress, you know, actual minorities like African-Americans in the country, right? Because it was designed to stop civil rights bills, basically.
Right. But, you know, it's now kind of assumed as kind of aura, yeah. Right? And we forget that history,
right,
which you accurately recite. But now it's seen as a way to, you know, protect things, protect traditions, and so forth. But I think your point is well taken, that if we insist on that to the point of allowing, you know, people to enact around the country, we're seeing that here in Michigan, voter suppression efforts that will affect turnout in 2022 and 2024, that will only assist Trump and his allies in getting back to office. I don't know if there's any kind of national coordination of this. I think there is. But it's all of a piece, all these threads coming together, purging election administrators. I think Mr. Raffenberger is going to lose his job in Georgia next spring, probably in a primary. And the other things that Jeff has mentioned are going on here in Michigan. It's all very alarming when you look at the whole cloth of what's going on, not just in Washington, but in the states.
Yeah, it's a very concerted campaign. And you're seeing, you know, Republicans across the country basically running on elections, competing who can be crazier than the next one in espousing Trumpism. I mean, you have, you know, Josh Mandel, who is just like plumbs a new low every day in Ohio. But then, you know, J.D. Vance says, you know, hold my beer. I can top that. And, you know, you have the woman who's Kelly Ward, I guess, who's running for governor in Arizona, who's, you know, smashing TV sets, and I have that right, right? And just, you know, crazy Trumpism, and all of them are basically united by denying the election results and pledging fealty to Trump because they see that as the only way to win Republican primaries, and they may be right.
And when you mentioned that it's a little bit ago that it feels like 2015 all over again, it made me think of this article I've seen in the last day that the, you know, 60% of the Republican senators don't want Trump to be the nominee in 2024, according to the source. But not one of them will go on public record and say that. Right. You know, that these profiles in Courage who see him, you know, privately as an existential threat to, you know, the American way of life and small d democracy, won't go so far as is willing to say that out loud. They're willing to go along and just cow in front of him and let this all happen. That craven, right, servility is what has led us to this precipice where we really are looking, as you said in your column yesterday, where one major political party poses an existential threat to democracy. And that's the framework, that's the context of the debate that we need to be having every single day. It's not about, hey, you know, today we're going to set all that, you know, animosity aside and talk about rural broadband. You know, we've got some really, really big fundamental challenge in front of us, and that's the preservation of the American experiment.
Right. And listening to the point you just made about that article on the Senate, you know, the Senate heroes who privately say they don't want Trump as the president, but won't say a word against them in public. I mean, that reminded me of something that Tom Friedman of the New York Times wrote years ago when he was covering the Middle East, saying that in the Middle East, what matters is not what people say in private, but what they say in public, what they're willing to stand behind. And in the case of Republicans, they're not willing to stand behind any criticisms of Trump. They're not, you know, willing to buck the big lie. They're not willing to resist his conspiracy mongering in any way in public. And so, you know, even if they're privately grumbling about it and privately skeptical, it doesn't mean a thing, because they've all been basically either bought off or scared and intimidated into acquiescence.
You know, Max, we've had some guests on the show, and I've read this as well, that who hold out hope that these criminal investigations in New York may somehow derail Trump. Do you think that's even possible, or are we kind of beyond that now, where even a criminal prosecution of him or a conviction of him will just be dismissed by his supporters, and he'll just move on beyond that? Do you think there's even any hope of that?
I'm very skeptical. I mean, this has kind of been a liberal fantasy from day one that, you know, Trump would get marched out of the Oval Office in handcuffs, which is a fate he probably richly deserved for all the laws that he has violated. But by this point, I've kind of given up hope that that's ever going to happen. It doesn't seem like there's a serious investigation at the federal level. There is a serious investigation in New York State, where I live, but I'm highly dubious that this is going to snare Trump. I mean, my guess would be that, yeah, maybe they'll get, you know, find some culpability for the Trump organization, but, you know, basically unless they can make the CFO roll over on him. And even then, I'm not sure they can nail him, because, you know, he's usually cagey enough not to put things in writing. You know, he says things through indirection. He conveys his meaning very clearly, but he's not, you know, usually on record in a way that he could be convicted in a court of law. And I just think that even if a case is brought, it's unlikely to ensnare him. And even if it does ensnare him, he's just going to use that as a talking point about how the deep state is after him. And I can't imagine it's really going to lead a lot of his supporters to suddenly abandon him.
Well, just a little anecdote here. I was sitting at a neighborhood restaurant in Macomb County recently, and just listening to the conversations was very scary. People don't even believe Biden's in charge. They think the deep state is in charge, Max. And so, you know, when you're into that level of delusion, it's just, I can't even imagine how to approach people like that and try to persuade them. And we probably can't. I think you made that point earlier. But what we have to do is mobilize people who still believe in democracy and make sure they understand the seriousness of this threat in 2022 and 2024. I think that is our only hope.
Well, I think you're right, Mark. The one thing I've said repeatedly is there are more of us than there are of them. However, what the Republicans have been very good at for a long time, even pre-Trump, is generating turnout and in messaging that keeps their voters stoked and energized at a level that turns them out disproportionately to their numbers. And it's, I think, a lot of the reason that Biden won such a large majority in the last election, you know, more than nearly 8 million votes, was that so many people who weren't necessarily Democrats wanted the crazy to end. They were just tired of the deluge of idiocy and insanity and constant in your face that was coming from Trump. But it's done nothing but get worse since he left. And sane people are just, they don't live and breathe this 24/7, but crazy never gets tired, and they wish there was more time in every day. it's hard for the coalition of the sane to stay vigilant and stay alert and be alarmed. That's the challenge before us, is to keep enough people alarmed that we turn out in the numbers that we represent in this country.
Yeah. And I think one of the weird and unfortunate phenomena you've seen over the past year is, I mean, although I think, I mean, I don't agree with everything that Biden is doing, but overall, I think he's doing the best he can. He's trying to turn down the temperature on our politics in particular, but it's very, very hard to do because of the insanity emanating from the Republican right. And, you know, for example, one of the biggest complaints people have is, why isn't the pandemic over already? Didn't Biden promise that we're going to end the pandemic? Well, it's not over because Republicans refuse to get vaccinated. That's the answer. And red states are, you know, banning vaccine mandates and so forth, which is completely outside of Biden's control. But Biden is getting basically blamed for it. And essentially, the more Republicans can create policy failure and stir up craziness, the more that actually works against Biden in a paradoxical and unfortunate kind of way.
Yeah, they've created self-fulfilling prophecy. Those are the words I'm struggling for, right? That you can, you know, sabotage efforts by Biden and he ends up getting blamed for it again and again because he is in charge. He is the president.
Right. Well, there's a big difference. We sit here, you know, roughly 13 months before the November 2022 elections. We have a harbinger that we'll see of that election in Virginia next month. However, it's where the state of the economy is at next summer, where the COVID numbers are at next summer, that are going to have a bigger factor in the outcome of the 2022 election in this climate. Because right now, if you turn on the TV, you'd think that Biden was about, you know, 5% approval rating. You know, his low ebb where he's at right now is probably higher than Trump ever was during his entire term in office. And they're, you know, making it sound like the sky is falling and that Biden has no support. That just isn't true. I'd rather be in the position, though, rhetorically, where how it's being covered this fall than next fall, and there's plenty of time for him to regain that footing, and so let's hope that he does, because I think that the you're right, Max. The future of our democracy depends on him finding that footing in at least not providing a tailwind or a wind in the face to Democrats running next election, and hopefully defy history and provide a little midterm boost. Well, with that, Max, thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it. This has been, a very sobering conversation, but it's one that we need to have, and we need to have as often and as loudly as we can with as many people. And so thank you for your voice. And folks, please look at the Washington Post for Max's columns, because he's an excellent voice of sanity in this crazy world.
Well, thanks for having me on, and keep up the good fight.
You too, Max. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's our time for this week. Our great thanks to Max Boot for his insights.
We love hearing from our listeners. Send an email to comments@arepublicpodcast.com.
If the Republic is still standing, we'll be back in a week. I'm Jeff Timmer.
Now, Mark Brewer. We'll be back next week.
You can subscribe to A Republic If You Can Keep It on your favorite podcast app. A Republic If You Can Keep It is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.